drink a Malibu and Coke in the right circumstances.
Yeah, oh, I could actually.
We're recording. Should we just go with it? Welcome to the Metal Hammer Podcast, episode 52. Just having a conversation about classic teenage beverages there. How you doing, Elle?
I'm all right, thanks.
Good. I'm Mal here with Elle, as always. You went to some gigs this week. What have you been doing?
Yes, I went to see Cancer Bats, Bleed From Within and Underside at the 100 Club.
Fucking hell.
It was the best Saturday night. Why are you laughing at me?
Because I thought you were going to go a bit further than that, but it was just...
That's my review.
Not of the year, not of the month, the week, just the best Saturday night.
So, Underside opened up. Actually, I should say, this tour has been going around the UK for 3 weeks.
It's been extensive, hasn't it?
Yeah, 3 weeks, something like 21 dates. I mean, Cancer Bats called themselves road dogs before. This is literally like the definition.
And they were over there quite late last year as well, weren't they?
Yeah, they've been over to the UK. Oh, they actually said on stage they've been over to the UK something stupid like 5 times in a year or 2 years or something. Mm. They keep coming back to the UK because they do have a fan base here. Exactly. And some of you might remember last November I went to Silence Festival in Nepal, which is organised by the band Underside. Bit of background on that, they've been organising a festival for I think 6 or 7 years at this point. They had to have a break in 2015 when there was an earthquake in Nepal, and they'd been building up the metal community over there and having this event every year, which is very difficult to do because not everyone in Nepal understands the value of metal. Mm-hmm. They have to get a lot of people on board, a lot of local officials on board to have this festival. So beyond that, they're just a really good band. They had Cancer Bats headline Silence Festival last year, and this time they've gone on a tour around the UK.
So they're like BFFs for life.
Exactly that. And it was so good to see Underside play 100 Club. It was so good because they really, really deserve to be there. And despite being on the road for 3 weeks, this was the last day of the tour, everyone was still super, super stoked to be there, which was the best thing ever.
Awesome.
So I could probably gush on for ages about Underside, but just go and listen to them.
Yeah.
Brilliant, brilliant band.
Really good.
They have a dancing demon on stage called a lackey, I think it is. Might pronounce that wrong. We have got a picture of it in the current Metal Hammer. Go check that out. And they've got so much energy and enthusiasm and passion, and they really want to be there and they really want to go for it. And it's like they're seizing every opportunity they've got and giving it their best shot, basically. You know, they want to be an internationally known metal band, and they should be, because they're exceptionally talented. Like I said, they're exceptionally passionate. They bring in these other traditional elements like the dancing demon, and I think they've probably got a few things planned for the next record. Plus, they have a song about a Tibetan sky burial where the corpse is...
A sky burial?
Yeah.
That doesn't make any sense.
where the corpse is, like, sort of cut up into pieces, and then the vultures come down and feast on it.
I mean, what's more metal than that?
I think I've got that right.
Jesus Christ.
Wow. They just scream buried in the sky over and over again, over like a proper metal riff.
That is... I don't know what to say to that. It's the most metal thing I've heard all week.
It's wow. Really good.
Cut the body up and give it to the vultures.
Amazing. Yeah. And obviously, you know, Tibet's not too far away from...
But what about Bleed From Within? Did you catch them?
I did.
Because I fucking love that band and picked their last album as my kind of, I guess, underrated album of the year for last year.
Yeah, and I can see why. They were good. Again, they had a lot of energy. They came out, they did their thing, they went off stage and everyone was very involved. There was a poor guy who got out of the crowd and got on stage and very enthusiastically threw himself off and just face planted.
No!
Yes.
No, not yes. Face planting stage diver, come on.
I mean, I don't think the 100
Club... A classic of the genre.
I don't think the 100 Club is the place to do it, because...
Yeah, I always find the 100 Club's a bit of a funny vibe.
It's a funny vibe, which maybe mentioned the shape, it because it's... Yeah, the shape. So obviously we're being a bit London-centric here.
Yeah, sorry. But it's quite an iconic club though, isn't it? Like, I think Rolling Stones played there once.
So basically they have pictures all over the walls of all the bands who played there in their history. It's a very iconic venue. And it's like a long horizontal rectangle with pillars in the way, which on paper sounds shit. But because of the history, you do feel something when you walk in there. And the fact that it is sort of a long rectangle means that you're always close to the stage, even if you're standing back. Where am I going with this? So, yeah.
The 100 guys.
Poor guy face planted. But what I would say is that they are... It was a really good show. It was a really good performance. But I feel like some of it's a bit one-paced or a bit one-tone.
Right.
And this is my shitty memory here. So, sorry about this, guys. The last two songs I really enjoyed because they had a lot more groove and a lot more melody and a lot more to kind of get stuck into. Mm. The rest of it was great for sort of a mosh. And, you know, like I said, there was no shortage of enthusiasm there and people were very into it. But I just feel like maybe it was a bit too one pace. I could have done with a bit of variation. I think maybe, you know, especially after sort of seeing a demon on a stage and hearing a few more melodic bits, I'd like to hear a little bit more variations on those songs. And the last couple of songs they did were just really... I was a lot more into them.
I can't remember what they were. I think Alive is one of their new tracks. They play quite a lot near the end. I think. But I could be chatting shit.
I'm just going to blame my chest infection for everything, so...
Do I need to ask how cancer bats were?
Just awesome. Yeah, I mean, they just... Being a bit sweary today, they just ripped the shit out of everything.
Rude.
The nice thing was, it was Liam's birthday, and he said on stage that he timed this show especially to coincide with his birthday.
Really?
Yeah, I don't know if that's true or not, but it wouldn't surprise me. Saturday night, London show.
I'd be amazed if he could specifically get an entire tour routed around, but...
Yeah, I mean...
If he did, fair fucking play.
I'm not talking about a whole tour routed around everywhere, but... it was just great because there was that real party vibe. Again, if the fruit's on the road, I'd be fucked. But, you know, they were going for it. Jay, their bassist, he was sort of like wearing these middle American South dungarees and sort of like had a naked chest and these sort of dungarees and these like mad eyes. He was like crazy eyes.
Like he's in a sexy farmer calendar.
Yeah, that's exactly what it was. Jay, if you're listening to this, you could do a farm pinup calendar. That would be good, wouldn't it?
Please don't.
They had a stand-in...
Well, please do, I'm sure.
They had a stand-in drummer because... their drummer. I'm sorry, I'm full of chest infection.
Come on now, keep it
their
together.
Their drummer is away right now. He's just had a baby. So they had a mate filling in who was really good. And I learned everything really well. Scott's always a good shout. He's just, you know, he's just cool, isn't he? You know, he just gets on stage and plays and, you know, behind his hair. Yeah, and he's just a cool guy.
He's an Arsenal fan, though, sadly, so...
I don't care. Well, and Liam, super hyped for his birthday, running around everywhere, throwing himself about. And towards the end, Underside came on with a pizza... Which apparently is some kind of tour tradition for his birthday. He always has birthday takeaway. And a couple of Underside members got on and played with them. And it was just a big party at the end. It was just a very cool party vibe. And they did other hits as well, you know.
Awesome. I mean, if there's ever been a bad cancer bats gig, I've not seen it or heard of it. So
it's just so good and so PMA. Like, if you're just feeling like total shit... If you put on Cancer Bats, it's going to raise your mood by at least 50%.
Just, I get they're like a national treasure for the metallic hardcore scene, aren't they? Just so, so great.
But, you know, they were just being announced for Bloodstock as well.
Yeah.
So,
I'm getting to that. I've got it down for the news segment.
I was just going to say they can fit in anywhere.
Coming back again to the UK.
Shall I finish up now? Are you raring to go?
No, you go for it. You go for it.
I was just going to say, silence. The organisers of Silence Underside, they're a bit worried about bringing in Cancer Bats because people in Nepal didn't know them too well and they're not metal. They are, like you said, more metallic hardcore. But again, I think they can go to different situations, different countries, different venues, different festivals. And because of that energy, they can win people over because you can't not have a reaction to that. You can't just stand still and not respond. There's some part of your body that is moving or doing something.
Killer. I'm envious. Well, I went to a gig as well.
Slightly further away.
And the reason that I have to say, despite what we're about to talk about being excellent, I'm genuinely gutted. I had to miss Behemoth at the Gates and Walls in the Throne Room, tear the London Forum to shreds by the sound of it. I mean,
I
know so many people that went and everyone said it was incredible and it just looked for all the world like an absolute triumph.
It looked like a milestone gig, didn't it? We both missed it, so...
Proper pivotal moment for the extreme metal people. Scene. Yeah, shunning all our metal points, but the reason is I was away. I was in Paris, and I went to see Ghost for the, I feel like, the 80th time in the last couple of years or something. So we talked about Ghost. We saw them at the Royal Albert Hall, and we went quite far into that on this very podcast, so you can skip back a couple of months if you want to hear that review, because it was effectively the same show. They did it in two parts again. They did the same set list. Once again, it flew by. Once again, it felt like, you know, I think they literally played about 18 songs or something, maybe 20 plus, and they all just sounded great. What made this different was firstly that it was a bigger venue, so there was more kind of fiery pyro, if you know what
fiery
I mean.
Fiery pyro?
Well, you know what I mean. So not just like kind of glitter and smoke and steam and confetti, that was like some proper like heavy metal fire going up as well. The set was a bit bigger. I heard from a very tired roadie after the gig that it takes 4 hours to take their set down. That
can you imagine?
Kind of chapel-esque setup they've got going on.
They deserve a prize.
They really do. They really do. But yeah, it was just brilliant. And the other thing that really made it different, that's what I was going to say, was that it was in front of an arena crowd. There was over 9,000 people at this gig called the Zenith in Le Zenith in Paris.
Say that again.
Le Zenith. And that wasn't too bad. Come on, man.
No, that was...
I got GCSE French. But yeah, so it's one... You know, we've seen them over here at the Forum. We've seen them at the Brixton Academy. And we've seen them, I think... But they were main support to Alice in Chains at Alexandra Palace. Is that right? Or maybe it was a co-headliner.
Yeah, we've seen
them. So we've kind of seen him, you know, headline Bloodstock over here as well.
It was not a co-headliner, it was definitely support.
Support, okay.
Yeah.
Well, we've seen him headline Bloodstock as well. So we've seen him kind of go up and up in the rankings, and the venues over here get bigger and bigger. But the real telling point is when you can go to a different territory, for want of a less wanky word.
That's quite wanky.
Go and see them in a slightly different environment. And people were going fucking ballistic for them.
Was anyone like dressed so up and stuff?
Yeah, people were dressed up. There were nuns, there were papas, there were a couple of cardinals, lots of ghouls. And once again, I know this is a very ongoing debate with Ghost. I would say the crowd was at least 70-75% certified card-carrying metalheads. You know, it just was. I don't know what else to say about it. But yeah, it was just fucking great, and I can't get enough of them, and I can't wait to see them with Metallica. And we may have done some other stuff with the band while we were over there that we will be revealing very, very soon in a future issue of Metal Hammer.
Did you see any merch? I really want a plush rat.
Yeah, they didn't have any plush rats, but they just introduced this like clockwork orange. I think I might show it to you, like a clockwork orange rip tee.
That's very cool.
It's so good. I got a event tee there, Paris on the back, because I'm a wanker. And I wanted to show off.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, I wanted to show off.
Oh, okay, so it wasn't just for your own personal pleasure.
No, just wanted to rub it in. I got so to go somewhere else. But yeah, it was brilliant. Yeah, I think that's enough for that, because we've done Ghost loads, but just seeing the same thing, be 10 out of 10, but in front of a massive crowd that was absolutely hanging off everything they did, and dancing. If people were crowd surfing, it was proper. It was really, really good.
Plush rats.
It put me in the mood for celebration. And what a celebrating week has been for metal.
Nice.
Did you ever think this sentence will come out of anyone's mouth? High on Fire have won a Grammy.
Yeah, no, I didn't.
What the fuck?
Yeah.
How amazing is that?
That's pretty cool.
20 years into their career, just one of the coolest, heaviest bands going. Obviously Matt Pike is one of the most instrumental names in, I don't know if you'd say the underground, but certainly in the kind of heavier side of metal history. And now he's got a Grammy sitting on his shelf, I presume. Yeah. I don't know where he might put it. He might put it in his toilet for all I know. But just totally caught me by surprise, to be honest. And not necessarily in a negative way, but I think, you know, the other metal nominees were Trivium, Death Heaven, Under Oath, Between the Buried and Me. We talked about how kind of felt like it might be Trivium's year, and I think a lot of the goodwill from the metal scene was kind of like rooting for Trivium this time out.
Yeah.
But High on Fire winning a Grammy is mental.
It's very cool.
In the very best way.
It's very cool because, you know, they are a band that just put out good music over and over again and just live the lifestyle as well, and it's It's just cool.
Matt Pike's so mad that his toe dropped off.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, because he had an infection. He was on tour and didn't get
and he just didn't bother doing anything about it.
He just lost his toe.
So his fucking
toe
dropped off.
But yeah, they live the lifestyle and that's who they are. And it's cool for someone to be rewarded with a Grammy for just doing what they do.
Yeah, and it's a weird one because, I mean, you know, the most recent stuff has been good and everything else. I think the thing is with the Grammys that we've talked about is that sometimes they pick out bands and you kind of think, why now? Like, why are you picking out High on Fire now? Like, is it because their latest album is the best thing they've done? Is it because there's a feeling that they've kind of broken over to another level that they weren't at before? Those are the kind of questions I think get asked about the Grammys. And with High on Fire, I'm not so sure that's the case. Like, again, I wouldn't compare it to their year, to the year that, you know, Trivium had, that Ghost had, even that Def Heaven had, to be fair. Certainly not the year that Greta Van Fleet had. They won the Rock Grammy, and I kind of feel like you can't really argue with that.
Well, it's like when Mastodon won, because obviously they should they should win because they're awesome, but it was that thing again of like, why now? Why not like 5 years ago? Why not 10 years ago? It's a bit confusing to work out why they made the decisions they do.
They do, yeah. But, you know, at the same time, I don't think anyone that can possibly argue that Matt Pike deserves the highest level of accolade that could be given to him for what he's done in the metal scene. So
it's cool.
I'm all for it. And yeah, like I said, Greta Van Fleet winning Best Rock Album, I'm not bothered about him. Kind of hoped Ghost would have won that, but Ghost already have a Grammy, so it's fine.
Yeah.
Fuck it.
And two nominations.
Yeah, very, very true. What else has been going on?
I thought you were going to tell me.
Oh, well then. Ozzy's out of intensive care and he's, quote, doing great. So that's good.
Yeah.
Shout out to the Oz. I think he's back on the road to recovery, which is good. Those dates should be rescheduled with Judas Priest for some time later this year, if they haven't been already. Yeah, always good to hear that Ozzy's back on it. He said that he's had a year of shit or something, didn't he, the other week.
You just feel sorry for him. Yeah. No one deserves that.
He's just not having a good time, but he's back on the mend, and hopefully he'll be back up to what I thought was a really, really decent high level of performance again on his recent date. So
cool,
look forward to getting the fuck back out on the road.
Good times. Cover star Ozzy.
Yes, recent cover star Ozzy.
Well, Bury Tomorrow have announced another UK tour.
Yeah, speaking of bands that just are smashing it on the live circuit all the time.
Yeah, December. They play in the Roundhouse in London.
The Roundhouse, yeah.
And where else the rest of the country?
Being a London-centred dickhead, I don't know. But you can go on to metalhammer.co.uk to find out all the dates. Yeah, I mean, we talk about a lot that, you know, metal's on fire right now. Parkway saw that, Ali Pali, Architects just did Wembley. Behemoth saw that at the Forum. While She Sleeps have just sold out the Roundhouse as well. Speaking of the Roundhouse, how great is that? Bury Tomorrow, I just feel like a kind of like, well, I was going to say the great unsung, but
we've sung
about them a lot. Yeah. I've always been a big fan of that band, but they've never quite felt like the band that like the scene has planted its flag in the same way as other bands, and yet they're playing the fucking Roundhouse.
I'm very excited. They've like, worked really hard.
We looked it up and that's like, 5,000 people or something? Which is just immense, isn't it?
Yeah, no, it's amazing. I think it's like slightly under 5,000. It's Brixton's 5,000, but it's such a cool place to do a show as well. Again, we keep mentioning this because we do live in London, so we're a bit London-centric, but it's one of these venues that has got this prestigious feel about it.
It's my favourite venue in London.
It is literally round. It's like an old engine shed and it's just got a cool vibe.
Yeah, and it's like you just get an amazing view of it wherever you are. It's fucking awesome. But yeah, they're playing 7 shows in the UK in December. They're also playing Rock City, Cardiff E Plus, I think that's how you say that. Portsmouth Pyramid Centre, Manchester Academy, a few other dates. So yeah, shout out Bray Tomorrow because they
excited.
Are back on a tear and
I cannot wait.
I couldn't get to the last one, so I'm going to get to this one.
I'm excited.
Fuck yeah, we only have 9 months to wait or something.
Oh, but that's good though because it's nice to have something to look forward to.
Yes, that's right. Yes, it is.
It'd be like a Christmas treat.
What's more festive than British metalcore?
Yeah, it's going to be great.
More bands for Bloodstock, Cancer Bats, we just mentioned. That'll be great, I think, Cancer Bats for Bloodstock.
Yeah.
Radium Speedhorn, Shapes, Tucker and Resin. That lineup is looking absolutely stacked. Can't wait for that. Haven't noticed any particular shitstorms about these latest.
No, I had a little paper on the Bloodstock Facebook page, but actually everyone seems pretty calm. I think Bile was reserved for Parkway Drive.
Yeah, or maybe it was reserved for our piece by Stephen Hill on the website this week.
Maybe it was.
Yeah, if you haven't read Stephen Hill's very, very decent piece about why the female perspective in the metal scene is kind of the most interesting thing happening in metal right now, go read it. And then if you feel like commenting on the Facebook post, go for it, because a lot of other people have. There are opinions. Maybe we should leave it there. Oh dear.
I mean, I don't know. Do we want to talk about it? Do we want to say...
Well, we've kind of covered sexism in the metal scene. I don't mean that means it's done now, we never need to do it again. But it was a little... Speaking as a man, I found it disheartening.
Well, we should probably say that Steve's piece wasn't about sexism specifically.
No, it wasn't. Exactly.
Steve was saying it's good that there are a lot of bands at the moment with women taking a prominent role in them, which are bringing new perspectives to metal. So people are writing about... And this is the thing maybe he didn't say specifically, which is very interesting... is that some of those women are writing about women's lived experiences. Obviously, there's a lot of bands in metal that write about universal experiences and a lot of stuff you can identify with, or, you know, maybe just stuff that's fantasy that you like. It doesn't always have to be, you know, personal, real stuff. But metal's very diverse. There are a lot of different things going on there. But some of the newer bands around now are specifically talking about experiences... like sexism or rape or, you know, what it's like to try and get a job. That just kind of topics that maybe you wouldn't traditionally associate with metal and that are coming from a woman's perspective. And obviously a lot of people will also say there's been women around in metal for ages, and that's very, very true. And there are bands like In This Moment who've addressed sexism and what it's like to be a woman. You know, there are other bands who've done this, but at the moment, particularly in England as well, there seems to be a lot of people writing lyrics which show the perspective that maybe has been lacking in the past.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's kind of what he was getting at.
Yeah.
That these voices are coming to the fore that weren't there before,
yeah,
or weren't being heard before.
That's not what the internet thought.
No, it's not, is it?
Yeah, as with all things. And, you know, it is effectively an opinion piece. It's Steve's opinion that this is a great thing. I mean, I share that opinion. A lot of people on our Facebook did share that opinion. A lot of people seem to take it as an opportunity to just, I don't know, accuse it of being political point scoring, which I find a bizarre thing to point out.
Yeah, we were trying to... be social justice warriors and virtue signal by putting something up, and I think it was more just going, hey, this is good, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, look, okay. This is offering a slightly different, like you said, perspective in metal. This is cool. And yeah, I mean, I think the worst thing was just seeing women come onto the Facebook page and say, well, and again, this isn't really what the original post was getting at, but kind of saying, well, this is my experience as a woman, and I've gone through this, and this is why we need to recognise different perspectives, and we need to recognise that there's still an issue in the metal scene. And then you see like 50 blokes jump on and go, no,
yeah,
you're wrong, when's metal ever oppressed you, shut up. It's just like,
yeah,
fuck me.
It was a bit of a bloodbath on there.
But we've a couple of people that were mentioned in the piece have been in touch with us about kind of continuing this debate and this discussion forward, so we're going to do some more stuff on it, I think,
Be nice to each other, please.
Yeah, like we said at the end of last week with the Parkway thing, can everyone just fucking be nice to each other? Jesus Christ. Let's just enjoy some metal and celebrate good bands. That's what we're all about, and that's what that piece was about. So, listen to Svalbard and A.A. Williams. Those are two that were in there that I particularly have been jamming a lot of recently. Shall we take some reader questions?
Okay,
from our nice readers who don't ever... our readers are always nice to us and don't come being mean. So, we like you. Our listeners and readers are lovely. www.facebook.com/metalhungry.
Well done, Merlin.
I haven't fucked up for like 6 months.
No, I know, it's really good now. Naomi Sanders asks, Metal to the Masses is starting up. What are your thoughts on the whole competition?
So this is Bloodstock's Metal to the Masses. This is a regular kind of band tournament, I guess you could call it.
Yeah, is it like a knockout tournament? It is a tournament because you get knocked out
exactly.
Each stage, yeah.
And the winning band gets to play Bloodstock. I think it's fantastic. I think it's a brilliant drive to help discover young bands. It has been UK-centric, but it's kind of moved over to parts of Europe and stuff in recent times. I think Bloodstock do a fantastic job of shining a light on young bands in the metal scene. So what could be better? And I've been to I live quite close to Big Red, which is one of the flagship metal bars in London, and I've been down there to check out some of the prelims, and there's some good shit coming into that tournament this year.
Yeah, I saw the final at Lambuca a couple of years ago.
That's also near my house.
It was
I live in Metal Central.
It was really fun. There's a lot of good bands in the UK, and this is not only a way to there's not only sort of a prize that you might be able to play Bloodstock, it's also a way of playing lots of shows, getting people in to support you, meeting other bands that you can tour with, and it's just that kind of community thing, isn't it? It's really nice to celebrate what we've got in the UK and else, you know, and like I said, there's been some global hits too. It's really nice to just support what we've got and for other people to come and show up for that and support each other.
Completely agree. Jack Hawkins asks, are there any bands that you loved when you were younger but can't get into them now? We're from the new metal generation now, so this is a lot of people might be assuming we've got quite a lot to say on this, but
well, Hoobastank played in the day with Buck Cherry. I didn't go.
Fuck me. Okay,
I didn't go because I was busy. That was the same night as Behemoth, I think, actually. But when I
would have judged you if you'd gone to that instead of Behemoth, I've got to say.
I mean, I wouldn't have done. But I'd go.
Just joking, if you're a Buck Cherry.
I'd go if it was a thing that was happening and I didn't have anything else on and I wanted a good time, because both those bands you could have a good time too.
Yes, to their one songs.
But that's what I was going to say. Like, Hoobastank had Crawling in the Dark and The Reason, and I could not tell you any of their other songs. So no. There were bands when I was younger where I was like, oh, I really love this band because I heard a couple of songs. And then could never get into the rest of it because it wasn't good.
Definitely.
So that's not really answering the question, but there's definitely a few new metal bands that happened to me. Like Soil as well, like Halo was a great song, but then you kind of dig further into Soil, I'm like, oh, do I really like Soil or do I just like Halo?
Well, I went and got all their albums, so I've got, like, I used to sit and listen to their Union Underground album. I can still think of a couple of songs on it.
I liked that album.
Yeah.
But you're thinking of Turn Me On, Mr.
Something
Dead,
about right? A chosen one's coming back to me. I remember that one. No. But yeah, I think new metal was basically the greatest one hit wonder generation of metal had. Because you drop any of those songs like Crawling in the Dark, Halo, Turn Me On, Mr. Dead Man, Edema, The Way You Like It, that's
Giving In as well.
Who's that by?
Edema.
Oh, you know another Edema song. Impressive.
That's a great song.
I don't even know what that is.
I'm giving it to you.
No, I don't know it.
Why did you make me sing that?
Because, well, I had to sing that.
I've got an Edema cassette tape.
Oh, wow.
Limited edition. It came in a cigarette packet.
how edgy. I've quite a fruitful period of going and basically hearing a song or seeing a video on music channels and then going and picking up the album and thinking at the time, this album's really good. And then once I actually delved properly into metal, I kind of went, and now I've just got like Drowning Pool and Soil albums just rotting in my CD collection somewhere.
Oh, no.
El Nino as well, I've got that album. The one that had
God Save Us.
Is it that one? The one that's got God Save Us on it.
God Save Us.
Something
like that.
No.
No, it had that bit in it, didn't it? Like towards the end?
Maybe.
Where it had, like,
I am not what you see. Out of pressure is breaking down on me. That one.
I like.
I will take what is mine.
I like everything that is real.
Oh my god! This is seriously. It's like new metal karaoke now. So yeah, that's mine.
This is awful, isn't it?
But I would still make a mega mix of all those. And to be honest, if you've ever happened to been unlucky enough to been at a club that I've DJed, you probably would have heard at least eight of those songs.
I love all those songs. I love all the new metal one-hit wonders, and I will fight for them.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. Bangers for days, as the kids don't say. This
I'm
next sure question.
What to make about this?
That's so. Yeah. Well, let's ask it and then let's dissect the question, because it's a bit mean spirited and I'm not sure about it.
Zach Wells asks, what's the chavviest song he like?
So on one hand, I was going to say this is a bit of a mean-spirited question. It's a bit, I mean, if you've ever grown up as a metalhead, you've probably been picked on by certain people that dressed a certain way and called you certain things. Like in my school, it was Rocky. Everyone would be like, oh, you fucking Rocky. And yeah, that's what
we got. That's a chocolate bar.
It is, and a damn good one, but that's not what they
meant. Do they still exist?
Yeah, they do. But that's what I got called. It would be like Grunge or Grebo. And
well, I'm from the north, and you weren't called, it wasn't a chav. You didn't say chavs, you said scallies. And people who liked metal.
We used to say kevs at my school as well.
What does that mean?
I don't know, just kevs, like Kevins. People, yeah, none of them were called Kevins.
No, it's scallies. Right. And then people who like metal were called moshers. There was no Grebo. I didn't hear Grebo until I moved here.
Yeah. So I kind of get why in metal culture there's a natural predisposition to using words like chav, but it's a little bit, I don't know.
Well,
it's a bit snobby.
Yeah, well, we all said it at the time because we all knew what it meant.
I totally did, yeah. I totally did.
But in past years, we've all re-examined it and got a bit like, actually, it's just like a way to be a bit shitty to people.
Yeah.
Like you said, it's a bit snobby, isn't it?
It's a bit snobby.
Looking down on people.
But in my school,
it was kind of scallies and metalers.
It was, yeah. If you've served in the war, you know. But then again, I kind of thought, I did used to love that song that went, baby cakes, you just don't know how I'd from that song.
Yeah.
Yeah, and there's no other way to describe that but super chappy.
My sister used to listen to some of those really bad garage songs.
No, garage is wicked. See, this is the other thing about this question.
No, there were some bad ones.
I genuinely love loads of music that Zach would probably call quote unquote chappy. And I'm not ashamed of it because I love dance music and I love hip hop and I like grime.
DJ like an MC Neat, do you remember that?
Yeah, of course.
Okay.
A little bit of that.
Yeah. But she also had the CD single of that song, Sex on the Beach. Do you remember that song?
What? Come on, move your body, sex on the beach.
Yeah.
We got him. Whoa.
Exactly.
Fuck, we are singing some shit on this podcast this week.
What's the song I actually like? If you go with Garage, I used to be like Craig David. I had Born to Do It.
Yes, of course.
Everyone had that record.
And his comeback single with Big Nasty a couple of years ago was great as well. See, that's what I mean. Like, I'm not really ashamed of liking all that stuff, but I think Zach would probably describe that as chappy. I would not, but some people might.
So. I can't think of anything else you would use that description for. Like, to me, if we're talking about that era, garage just comes to mind because that's kind of what people were listening to in charts and stuff. And just like dance music, mainstream dance music.
I mean, I went to Creamfields once and this was kind of, dance music is like massive now. And it's always been big, but now it's like, it's huge in America. You get most pop artists kind of incorporate dance music into their, you know, that kind of soft house sound into their music now. So festivals like Creamfields are just a totally different thing from what they were when I went. But I went to Creamfields when I was about 18 or something, and it was pretty leery, for want of a better word. But it's still good. Saw Above and Beyond. That was good fun, you know.
I don't know who they are.
They're wicked, but again, also Zach might describe it as chappy. I don't know.
So, well, that was a nice reminiscence.
Yeah, just took everyone down memory lane there. I'm sure what you really wanted from this metal podcast was us to sing new metal and garage songs back at you. So
that's another hard question. Scott Sutumple asks, favourite guitar solo? Mine is Comfortably Numb by Pink Floyd. That's really hard because personally I'm not a massive guitar solo person. Because I was thinking about this the other day, if I had to say what I like most about heavy music, for me I'm usually drawn to vocals and drumming, which maybe is not normal. Don't get me wrong, I obviously love guitars, but I've never really been like super duper into guitar solos or anything like that. I don't know why I said super duper, that was weird.
I'm kind of the same, but then I thought about it and...
Oh, I've chosen mine.
Oh, go on then.
November Rain.
Oh, yeah. Of course. Iconic. Iconic. I was thinking of Slash solos, but solos aren't... They're not really the main thing I gravitate to in heavy music either. I like riffs, and I like Sounds like a weird thing to say about metal, but I love really good melody, which is
that's kind of what I meant about vocals. And actually, obviously, I do love riffs. I was just completely ignoring a whole swathe of stuff that I love.
Of course. I know you like riffs, Al. It's fine. But yeah, I mean, if you look at the original master and inventor of heavy metal, Tony Iommi, he knows how to lay down a wicked solo. And I love the kind of, I guess you could call it the solo over Die Young, and when he goes off on one in the middle of that song. But to me, it's like his melodies that he layers in within all that like heavy riffage he lays down as well. I just love it. But that said, the song that kind of turned me onto, I guess, guitar music in the sense of being more than just, you know, writing songs, but actually crafting a little bit of showmanship in it, was Randy Rhoads. I picked up the tribute album, the Aussie Live album, and it just fucking blew my mind. And this was before I'd even really properly got into Black Sabbath. So the first time I heard a couple of Sabbath tracks was on that album as well. Most of the stuff he did with Ozzy and the solos within that I love, but the solo on Mr. Crowley is obviously an absolute classic. It fades out at the end, but it's even better on the live one on tribute, because it just ends with this big like bit. I love that. Ozzy really knew how to pick guitarists, didn't he? Because Zach Wilde's work on No Rest for the Wicked. I know No More Tears is the one the Zach Wilde album people talk about, but I actually prefer No Rest for the Wicked. And I think the solo on that and just the speed that he flies off on is just amazing. I love the Kirk noodling over the end of Fade to Black, which is my favourite Metallica song. And obviously Maiden, just in general, just everything they've got. Half their songs have about 10 solos in now though, so pick your favourite really. Oh look, it's a question related to what I was just gabbing on about.
Mitchell Ackman asks, is Ozzy's solo career bigger than Black Sabbath's?
What do you think?
I just say
depends
no,
what you count the solo
because
career.
I guess I'm thinking about like what is worldwide recognition, and I think people worldwide would recognise Black Sabbath songs more than they'd recognise Ozzy songs.
I would agree. Crazy Train versus Paranoid, isn't it? That's quite close. But I would say more people know who Ozzy Osbourne is than know who Black Sabbath are. If we're talking about
name
Ozzy versus... If we're talking about albums, that's quite close.
Yeah, so you think maybe name recognition Ozzy is bigger, but on
definitely
terms of songs, Black Sabbath is bigger.
Because realistically, is anybody going to know who Black Sabbath is and doesn't know who Ozzy are? But I'm pretty sure plenty of people will know of who Ozzy is, but
yeah,
haven't heard of Sabbath because he's a celebrity.
Yeah, I mean...
Because of the Osbournes.
I was going to say, it all kind of came out of the Osbournes, really. If you hadn't heard Black Sabbath then, you certainly knew who Ozzy was, at least, even if you weren't really sure where he came from.
Yeah. I think... Oh, I don't know. And the thing is, Ozzy solo as well is massive in the US. You know, you think he'd spent all that time taking Ozfest around the States... at a time when Sabbath were in a bit of a malaise, you know, they didn't really know what was going on there. Ozzy just got bigger and bigger and bigger, and I don't really know. I feel like before Sabbath had that big reunion in 2011, which they then carried up till the recent disbanding, I feel like at that point Ozzy's name was almost bigger. But then because Sabbath had been out of the game for a little bit, and there was such a big deal was being made out of the fact Sabbath were coming back and doing the album, I think that kind of made Sabbath a bigger deal for a little while. But yeah, it depends. I don't know. I definitely think Ozzy's more famous than Sabbath though.
I think Sabbath's songs more well known.
Wow, call it a score draw. Adam asks, I've got the absolute definite answer for this, I reckon. What's the most metal kids TV theme?
What if we're going to say the same thing? Should we both write it down and then share it?
Or we could just say it.
Okay. I thought we could do a reveal. Well, the one that comes to mind straight away, which I don't know actually how metal it is thinking about it, but I was just thinking about the Raccoons.
What?
It's not a metal song, but like it's a very...
You mean you can run with us?
Yeah. So it's not
fucking
like metal,
tune,
but it's like...
No.
Yeah, but that programme with Cyril Snitter, it sort of has an edge to it.
Oh, so that was like the closing theme. I kind of feel like that was a
fine
bit.
I've had no time to think about this. You do yours and I'll think about it.
The correct answer is the Power Rangers theme, the original Power Rangers theme.
I don't
theme.
Know how that goes.
Go, go, Power Rangers!
Oh, that theme, yeah.
Yeah. But if you listen
that's
to...
That's not metal.
It's a thrash song. I'm not going to play it on air because I don't think we're allowed, but I'll play it to you after. It's a thrash song, mate. It's like... And it was written by Buckethead.
Fine.
So it's metal as fuck. It's got a solo... It's literally got a guitar solo in the opening, like, 30 seconds. And...
Yeah, I always think about it as being, like, poppy and a bit bleepy.
No. Yeah, but it was a riff. It was playing with a guitar. I'll play it to you afterwards. Go listen to the original Mighty Morphin Power Rangers theme song, because that is a thrash song. Honourable shout outs to Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, because that's a big riffy song as well. I mean, most of the late 80s, early 90s stuff was pretty metal.
Attack of the Killer Tomatoes.
Yeah, I remember that. Killer Tomatoes,
It was Attack of the Killer Tomatoes.
Oh, yeah. I just sang it wrong. Yeah, that was pretty metal.
I don't know why we're doing so much singing. I'm not,
I know,
I'm
so
not in good shape today.
You didn't sign up for this. You didn't deserve this.
This is not me in my best form.
What else? Yeah, I think just Power Rangers and Ninja Turtles is pretty much...
Well, I'm having Attack of the Killer Tomatoes, so...
Tomatoes, really.
There was tomatoes in the program.
Yeah, true.
What about the Demon Headmaster?
No. I don't think that even had a guitar in it.
It was spooky.
Count Dracula was quite metal. Dracula. Actually, it was kind of more like Funky Sally.
I feel like I need some more time.
Well... I don't think you'll do better than Power Rangers, so there. That's everyone's homework for this week. Go listen to the Power Rangers theme. Listen to the full extended version, which I definitely haven't done loads over the last 20 years, like a sad loser. That is it for the Metal Hammer podcast this week. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Don't forget to go pick up the latest and greatest, some might say, issue of Metal Hammer. We go through the 50 greatest albums ever made, as picked by our all-star panel, because we're celebrating 50 years of metal this year. 1969 was the ground zero for heavy metal coming together, so we're going to be celebrating across the course of the year 5 whole fucking decades of the greatest genre in the world ever, and it all starts in the current issue out now, so go pick it up. We will be back next week. In the meantime, don't forget to rate us on iTunes and all of that business, and Acast as well, because it does help every little, as Tesco once kind of said. We'll see you next week, I guess.
Yeah.
Bye. Bye.